A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello there, welcome back to the OMG MotoGP channel and welcome back to Extra, previewing the final race weekend of the year for MotoGP in 2023. We're heading to Valencia and, Keith Ewan, former Grand Prix rider and British champion, as always, joins myself, Harry Benjamin, were waiting to record this podcast because there was a press conference between Luca Marini and Fabio Di Gianantonio and we thought, this is it. This is going to be the big one. And what did we get, Keith?
Absolutely nothing, of course. I was at the motorcycle show today all day long up at the NEC motorcycle live show, which is why I probably look a little bit flustered because one or two beers and meeting up with many old mates. We live in a strange world in motorcycling, you know. I have to say, the NEC show, good show, looking pretty good for me. But you won't find many people much younger than me there. It was slightly shocking that our whole demographic is the wrong end of the market for me. And it's got to be something that's got to be put in place, particularly here in the UK. We must do more at Silverstone. We must do more regarding the show. We must encourage more children to be involved, more youngsters to be in, teenagers involved. I hear all the things about the place being cold and dark and dim at this time of the year, and so nobody wants to be on motorbikes. I understand that, obviously. But there has to be a situation where we can promote our sport better in the UK than we are. Sorry for those of you living in nice sunny countries that don't have this problem, but we do here. The press conference was basically not even worth waiting for. I came home early on the train just to make sure that I got it, and I didn't get it. The best part out of the press conference, Pedro Acosta, I've got to say, the quote, obviously, probably of the decade, I don't know about of the year, where he said that, racing is easy if you take it easy. I just love that quote. He just sat there. I mean, the youngest ever Moto2 champion, going to Gas MotoGP next year with Tech 3, which will be a fantastic position for him. And so everything is just easy. Two-time world champion, Moto3 world champion, Moto2 world champion. Racing is easy if you take it easy. I mean, just take that. You imagine the amount of people disheartened by the sound of that.
It really knocks Senna's. If you don't go for a gap anymore, you're not a racing driver. Well,
yeah, where he called Jackie Stewart Stewart. I love that. Didn't even call him by Sir Jackie. AYS got a shock.
Oh, good old Pedro Acosta. But so, I mean, we got nothing from Marini or Digi, because I always...
The thing with Marini is, he's in his brother's team. They're on Ducati at the moment. There's rumours about Yamaha. Mm-hmm. I think Speedweek, Gunter Wiesinger's website, has been speculating again about Yamaha going with Rossi's team, which, of course, is a natural assumption that at some stage in the not-too-distant future that will happen. But, you know, I wouldn't imagine at the moment, but Gunter is a man that is very well connected. So I wouldn't dismiss anything that Gunter Wiesinger comes up with. That is for certain. Marini, there might be several reasons for why he can't make the announcement. I mean, it was the most long-winded, non-event that I think I've ever listened to. Honestly, even Marini lost all the style of the wonderful Italian that he is while he was sort of speaking. It was just a nonsense. But it could be for several reasons. It could be that he's playing hardball with his management, not just for the finance. That definitely will be sorted to one side, but it will be the team behind him, what say he has in the direction the bike's going and stuff like that. It will be nuts and bolts behind the scenes that they need to get nailed down. He needs to get nailed down. as a young fella coming into a broken team as Honda is at the moment. So I would suggest that that's probably it. I mean, what's the backstop? He stays with his brother and he stays on race-winning potential machinery. Hello. That's not so hard, is it? But what it does do is it mucks up and Fabio and Didier. I mean, where does he end up? Does he end up with a MotoGP ride? I mean, the natural thing for me would be for him to sign for VR46 if your man Marini moves across to Honda. You know, I somehow hope that he did move across to Honda, but you know, it's a risky old business. I don't know whether I'd do it, even if I was 20 years old and taking a risk or whatever it might be. I mean, it just seems to be too risky going to Honda. 2-year deal. I mean, it could be a brilliant coup. Honda could come out of the bag next year with some real performance once they've been down a wind tunnel or two and got things worked out a little bit.
Well, and concessions, right, as well, are supposed to help them out.
Well, yeah, I mean, this concessions thing at the moment, I mean, is there any agreement on that just yet? I mean, it's an issue that why would, and again, we come back to that rulemaking situation where the manufacturers have to agree in unanimously.
That's a tough word, isn't it? It's me, Jan Antonio.
Well, I did say I've been drinking at the NEC. So,
are you doing this drunk? Unbelievable.
But the point being is that you know, like, you're not going to get Gigi Delinea to agree to something that Honda want just because, you know, there's going to have to be good reason for it. The only issue, you know, I discussed this on the stage with Julian Ryder today at the NEC, that the fact of the matter is Dorna do have a wild card in that they can turn around and say, well, as a safety situation, we believe that the aero is now becoming slightly unsafe. The front tyres are ballooning in tyre temperatures are going up, so we're not getting consistent tyre pressures and the like in there. Don't forget, next year, if you're running a tyre pressure that is below the designated 1.8 bar for 50% of the race, you get disqualified. It's not three seconds. It's not a slap on the wrist for a warning for the first event. You get disqualified next year. That is going to be a massive penalty. So aero has a lot to answer for, and aero is causing most of the trouble, I would think, for the tyre manufacturer. So there's a lot to be discussed between now and then. My excitement at the moment is all about Valencia, not just the race. I think I've pretty much bypassed the race in that, you know, Bagnaia, only three times. This is courtesy of Nick Harris. Nick Harris, wonderful journalist, as you know, and puts out quite a lot of press releases. Nick Harris used to be the MotoGP.com main commentator. He put a thing out that only three times in the Premier class has it been won from behind. So it's only been overhauled three times.
Wow. Yeah.
And if I immediately get to this, because I know you ain't going to have this stat in your head as a Formula One man. The 1992, Rainey beat Doohan. Doohan, if you remember, had that massive leg injury, and he had a 65-point lead at that particular point, and he was on to win his first ever title. And Wayne Rainey caught and passed him. He had a 2-point advantage going into the final round in Kyalami, and Wayne Rainey caught and passed him and won the world title. So Mick Doohan was devastated and had that big injury as well. In 2006, of course, we talk about that a lot. Rossi fell off in the final round of Valencia. What was the difference there? Rossi had a 7-point advantage. No, he didn't. He had an 8-point advantage over Hayden. Rossi fell off. Hayden did the business, won the world championship in 2006. He's only the great, you know, Nicky Hayden, no longer with us. Rest in peace. But the most controversial one, of course, of all at Valencia, coming from behind. Rossi had a 7-point advantage over teammate Lorenzo going into the final round. After all those shenanigans at Sepang, when, you know, Rossi and Marquez came together, Marquez basically held off Rossi. Rossi finished fourth, wasn't enough. Lorenzo won the world title. And there was a massive fallout all over the place, and the world went completely bonkers and split down the middle. You're either the red team with Marquez, or you were the yellow team with Valentino Rossi. Everybody hated each other, and it's the first time I've ever seen such nastiness on the terraces or verbally in my sport. But there you go. That was then. So it's only three times that someone's ever come from behind to overtake, and no one has had as big a lead as Bagnaia's got. I know we've got a sprint race as well involved in this one, which means there's 37 points and instead of the modern-day 25 points, as was. So there you have it. So effectively, Bagnaia should be champion. So getting back to what I said a minute ago, I'm looking forward to Valencia for Monday and Tuesday. Monday, Moto3, Moto2, ride on Pirelli tyres for the first time. That's very important. Take over from Dunlop as control tyres from next year until 26, I think it is. And obviously, we've got people on new bikes on Tuesday, which should be really exciting. We've got the first time Mark Marquez has been out on a Ducati. Can't wait to see that on the Gresini bike. Everybody settling in. So a lot to look forward to on Tuesday as well. Next week is going to be an exciting week.
Yeah, we're going to do the pod a little bit later next week. So we're going to wait for testing to happen. And then Pete McLaren's going to join us to look back at testing and, of course, the final race of the season. So look back at that. But, of course, one man who is bidding farewell and will be on a new bike, Alex Rins, back for a LCR Honda farewell. He's been given the all clear.
Yeah, he's back. I mean, we still don't have a full grid, though, do we? Miguel Oliveira out of it. So we're still not a full grid situation here. Lorenzo Savadori has taken over in that particular camp. So for the RNF Aprilia team, replacing Miguel Oliveira is Lorenzo Savadori. Just a couple of other wild cards. David Almanzar is in for Moto3. And in Moto2, we've got Hector Garzo on an NTS chassis is scheduled. Now, I haven't looked up to see whether that is a genuine NTS chassis. I'm assuming it is because it's a one-off. There are no other NTS chassis this time. If you remember, NTS were with us a few years ago in Moto2 and then disappeared. Very, how should we say, upmarket factory that make really, really trick stuff. So NTS should come up with something. Whether this is a dip in the toe in the water for future again, I don't know. But Hector Garzo's on an NTS and Matteo Ferrari is on one of Gresini's Moto2 bikes, comes in as well as a wild card. So that's your wild cards done and dusted.
Well, lots to look out for then. Now, once again, some great feedback as well from our last episode with the guys from Driven International. Really fascinating chat all about circuit design. We could have had a 2-3 hour chat with them, I think.
Easily.
And they are joining us a little later on this show as well to look a bit more at the track stuff in particular with Valencia, which we know, Keith, you've been outspoken at before. But what about Valencia as the place and the surroundings? Give us your insider's guide.
I like Valencia. I mean, it's a great place. Communication-wise, travel-wise, it's really easy to get to. The track's not far out of the city. The city's a good city as well. So, you know, you've got everything you need from a destination-type place. I suppose the only reason I'm critical of Valencia is because it's at the end of the year. It can be often quite cold there and not the best when it comes to tyre adhesion. By the time you get to turn four, you've been on the left-hand side of the tyre for about a week. I can't remember how long it is actually. I think we timed it out at something like 30 odd seconds, something like that, on one side of the tyre before you turn right and lose the front end straight out from underneath you. So that's a bit of a bind. Getting past, I mentioned, you know, the Rossi Lorenzo thing. Half the reason, you know, Rossi couldn't make any more progress. He came from the very back of the grid to get to fourth place. But as soon as you get to people that are of a similar pace, and let's face it, everyone is of a similar pace in MotoGP at the moment, you can't get past them. And that is from a spectator's point of view, you're in a ball ring. You know, you can see from whichever grandstand pretty much you book, you can see the entire track, which makes it fantastic. And since then, they've put a bit of an orange grove in the middle as well to make it look pretty. So it's quite a pretty looking track in the middle. You know, it's the circuit Ricardo Tormo. It remembers a famous racer called Ricardo Tormo. That's the name of the track. There's a lot to be said for the region and the racetrack from a spectator position, I suppose. But from a spectacle, from a racing situation, it's not perhaps the best. Sure, Valencia deserves a place in the calendar, but I always wonder why we end up coming to a track like...
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This to wrap up a championship when there are obviously much better tracks that we could end on. It's my only criticism. I know that people bloody go for me over it, but it's slightly disappointing from that point of view. And it's cold there at this time of the year, even if the weather is going to be sunny, as it says it is. When that sun drops, starts to drop behind the horizon, know, you have got a track that temperature changes immediately, and that again exacerbates any problem you've got with tires, tire pressure, and so on.
Yeah, well, if you are there, I hope you've I hope you packed a coat to go with you to keep you warm. But let's have a little more in-depth look at the track in Valencia and a bit more circuit talk with the guys from Driven International. Now, I was going to try and make this sound really professional, but we are filming this on a different day. So, Adrian, nice fancy edit now. Now, to help us continue looking forward to Valencia this weekend, Ben and Gary are back from Driven International. If you haven't heard our chat earlier on in the week, all things circuit design, do go back and have a look at that on our YouTube and wherever you get your podcast. But thanks for continuing with us, Ben and Gary. Now, I mean, Keith, you've been quite vocal over the last couple of shows about your distaste for the Valencia track. Just tell us, what is it first, Keith, about Valencia that kind of grinds your gears a little bit?
Well, I mean, I think you're really bringing me to a point here, aren't you, with it? I mean, Valencia as an area, as a region, fantastic. And if you couldn't cram more of a facility in a smaller piece of land, and I think the boys will agree with me on that. The design, actually, for the amount of land space you've got is brilliant. There's no doubt about it. But I think that it's a bit of a one-line racetrack, which means that you tend to find that if somebody's in front, there's not a lot of passing that goes on. That's pretty evident over the years. It's at the time of the year. For me, the big problem is it's the final round. And I feel that you could have ended our season, MotoGP season, up the road at Catalunya would have been better. It's a bigger racetrack. There's more opportunities to do something a bit spectacular. Valencia just seems to be... It's a bit like Brands Hatch Indy Circuit. We all like to go and watch Brands Hatch Indy Circuit because you can see everything from any particular place that you sit in the stands. I mean, from a fan's perspective, you know, the access to Valencia is fantastic. You know, you can get in by train. It's not far out of the city, da-da-da-da-da. And anywhere where you sit in the masses of concrete, it's not very environmentally friendly, judging by the amount of concrete they've made out the stands. But you've got a position where you can see everything that's going on. So from a fan's perspective, brilliant. But it's at the time of the year when it's likely to be cooler. Although, having said that, the long range forecast says this weekend, it's going to be sunny all through the weekend. So we might end up with the final round not as cold as we were all predicting it was going to be, and quite difficult. You've also got the other problem from a motorcycle perspective, and the boys from Driven are going to give us some kind of an angle on that. You have got something like five left-hand corners before you turn right at turn four. So you've got a situation tire-wise, and we didn't really touch on that in our earlier program, earlier on in the week. You know, how you manage tire temperature and stuff like that, is that something that goes through their mind when they're designing a track, that you're going to be, you know, half a dozen, five left-handers before you get to turning right, when the right-hand side of a tire on a motorcycle is effectively gone a little bit cooler, just by a few degrees, but that makes a massive difference. And down you go. Turn four is notorious at Valencia for tipping over. So there you go. I'll fire it out there. It's not a bad place. It's still a great, you know, at the end of the day, Valencia is a nice region, great place to go, but just seems a bit odd to me to end a series as hectic as ours at this particular place when there are, for me, better racetracks to end a series on.
Yeah. So, Ben, Gary, what would you make of that? What do you make of that track, first of all? And you know, if you were tasked with redesigning it, maybe perhaps, you know, how would you go about that?
I think, and this is more of a general answer to circuit. So, yeah, I love Valencia to go and watch. As Keith was saying, I've been there for Superbike and MotoGP, and it's amazing venue. Like, the atmosphere is incredible. It's almost like a stadium, isn't it? So, really cool from that perspective. There's a few things with track design that we often get asked, like, and it's a big thing with a lot of our clients, is what's the length of the track? We always get, you know, can we, you know, if you're at 2.9 kilometers with your design, you can guess what they're going to say. Let's get it to 3, or, you know, 3.5 needs to become a 4-kilometer track, and it keeps going. The problem with that is you end up, you know, trying to cram more into the space, and your average, you know, we look very, very carefully at average speed and overtaking points. So, you know, if we were going to redesign, if the brief came to us, redesign Valencia, the first thing we'd look at is, what's the average speed, where's the overtaking points, can we do anything to, like, potentially, you know, increase the flow of the circuit, I think the pit lane exit is something there that's a bit compromised, obviously, at Valencia with and we spoke about this earlier on in the other show around bikes coming out on the racing line. That's something that I think you would look at as a designer. But it's always tricky when you've got a track that's you've been there for a long time and is designed in a different era where, you know, some of the thought processes now are completely different and you're working with more modern regulations. It's always tricky, and the same as like you mentioned Brands Hatch, Keith. You know, if you redesigned Brands Hatch now, you'd probably ruin some of the character of it, to be honest, but you'd end up with a very different circuit. I don't know whether Gary has any thoughts.
No, I think exactly the same. You know, and the footprint dictates, you know, you touched on it immediately, Keith. You know, it's such an amphitheater area, just like Brands Hatch, you know, fantastic facility. But it is trying to, you know, how do you get that second turn to be a right-hander or third turn to be a right-hander where everything is so compact, you know, swapping backwards and forwards, going in different directions to get that track length, you know. And nowadays things have changed with a bit more cambers acceptable where it wasn't back in the day. Yeah, possibly needs a complete redesign. You know, does the track go partly into the paddock? You know, so the garages are flipped round. You know, you need to have a complete blank sheet of paper. But then when you flip things round, you're constricting your access into the venue. So, you know, more likely is what it is unless you made it shorter, unfortunately.
I would definitely say, and this being, you know, being open, like it's the tire question that you ask, Keith, around tire temperatures. I would say, like, if we're designing a brand new track, that's such a detailed point. It's a very important one, but usually there's so many other constraints going on around like land parcels or where you can get the paddock and pit lane. Like we could quite feasibly end up with, say, three or four right-handers or left-handers on one of our designs before you end up with a alternating corner. That could happen on one of our designs, I would say, and it probably creates then a bit of a headache or a challenge for the riders, but I wouldn't say it would be something that I would design out on purpose.
But we'll certainly think about it in the future.
That's a good point that you've raised, yeah. You'd have to put a number on it or something.
I wonder whether you guys, you know, like whether you collect drawings. You've got a drawer in the office there each that you've got doodles that what you would do with different racetracks if you were given the opportunity or asked. Do you kind of go through that process?
We do. We do. We're often asked to stitch corner sequences together and can we take this corner from here? We've got benchmarks of every single circuit in the world drawn up, all the speeds. We're in the process of designing our dream track as well at the moment, so look out for that. So yeah.
we'll have to get you back on when you've got your dream track done. Yeah. I want to see what that is. Oh, that's it. Someone did that in F1 and it was about I think a lap, they've calculated a lap would have been about 8.5 minutes or something like that if they included all of their dream corners from every F1 track.
You get one qualifying lap, unfortunately, if that's the case.
Yeah, exactly.
You can go back to things like the Osterite ring and stuff like that. There were some fantastic corners on the Osterite ring, but they're too dangerous to incorporate in modern day tracks because we don't have the space and the runoff.
Yeah.
But you can just imagine if you go back far enough, you can find a corner for every season. It'd be perfect.
I've got a book, which is my favorite book that I've had since I was a kid, and it's by Joe Sayward. It's the World Atlas of Motor Racing, and every single track in there has been hand drawn. I would love to recreate something like that now for modern day. I'm a bit of a track, obviously track geek. I've been drawing them on my school books.
I would hope so. But I mean, that's brilliant. Well, we do know that that people from Dorna and the FIM do listen, so that we've got the pitch for the track redesign there. Let's see what happens. Look, we're nearly out of time for Extra. It's the final weekend of MotoGP in 2023. Before we let you go, Ben, Gary, is it going to be Pecco Bagnaia or can Jorge Martin clinch it back in the final round for the title?
I think it's going to be really tight. After seeing what's happened, you know, especially in the recent weeks, and obviously Pecco's now got that little bit more of a gap, it's certainly not going to be sorted very quickly. But yeah, Pecco for me.
I think Pecco's going to take it. Yeah, I think he's already got the advantage now, and I think he's been there before, isn't he, mentally? I think, I think he'll do it. I think Martin knows future, you know, we're going to see next year and onwards, he's going to be up there and battling for championships for sure. So, love to see him win it, but I think Pecco's going to take it.
It's certainly going to be a weekend to watch, that is for sure.
Absolutely. Keith, Pecco, Jorge?
Well, I mean, with 37 points on the board and 21 points the difference between them now, Jorge Martin has got nothing to lose at all. So it's balls out, flat out, going for it. And sprint race will be probably Jorge Martin. That shifts the pressure, and the pressure is everything. We've seen Bagnaia make mistakes before when he really shouldn't have done. He almost made one at the weekend, tripping over Didier's back end. So, I mean, there is the possibility of still a mistake. That's the great thing about bikes. It's unpredictable. Verstappen, you saw him. He shouldn't have won at the weekend, but he did, you know, because it's the way of Formula One. You can pretty much, the formulaic way it is, you just can't beat a bloke that's going that good in that vehicle. But on bikes, you can. And so a little bit of luck, perhaps. I think Bagnaia, to answer your question. but Martin was my, I thought Martin had got it this year. I genuinely did. And he might still have it. We'll see.
Yeah, I think we both said Martin, but it's looking like Pecco, isn't it? But well, let's see. Enjoy the action for the weekend. We'll be back next week to look back at it all, and we'll do a season review as well, and a Christmas special as well to round out the season too. So
and
yes,
we're down the pub. Don't forget.
Oh yeah, down the pub, down the pub. James Toseland, that's coming as well. We're in that. What's the Kettering pub?
The Stirrup Cup in Barton Seagrave.
Yeah. So
not that I get free drinks.
yeah. We'll have another installment with James Toseland. Do make sure you continue to support us. It means a massive deal to every subscription, every like, every comment on the YouTube channel and wherever you get your podcasts. And a massive thanks to Ben and Gary from Driven International. We'll have to get you back on. And do make sure you check out their stuff. And we look forward to seeing what the future holds for the circuits you're involved with. But in the meantime, thank you very much. And we shall see you after Valencia. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.